This is Troy Wagner.
This is Eric Miller.
We are
Ravers for Recovery.
And if you're listening to this,
so are you.
How was your day?
How was your week?
We want to hear from you. Reach out to us by email, info@raversforrecovery.org. And go ahead and connect with others in recovery by joining our Facebook page. And always stay up to date with the latest news by visiting our website, www.raversforrecovery.org.
And now, join us for this week's podcast. Alrighty, hey, my name is Eric Miller. I'm with Ravers for Recovery. Troy is not feeling well tonight, so Troy, hope you get better soon, brother. Since he's not here to do this, then I figured I would do a little impromptu and kind of give you a little insight onto who I am and a little bit about my backstory and history and why I choose to do this. So bear with me. Thank you for being here. If you all tune in tonight, I much appreciate it. And so here we go. My name's Eric, obviously. I'm 50 years old, and I am 215 days clean, roughly 7 months. Probably the longest in my life that I've ever have been clean, especially in the way that I am working steps, having a sponsor in a program. More than anything, I am present, which we'll touch upon that a little bit later. I come from a good family. I'm an only child. I was raised military. My father was Air Force for 25 years, and you know, like I said, only child, so I had no brothers or sisters. I had a good childhood. You know, I didn't come from a bad family. I didn't come from wasn't depressed or picked on or bullied or anything of that nature. I mean, I fought my way through things. I'm hearing impaired. I had spinal fluid meningitis when I was 17 weeks old. So I wore hearing aids for the majority of my life. I ended up in, you know, speech therapy classes and stuff throughout my school year and school career. And so I had to learn to speak and to talk. I didn't learn to read and write until I was in the third grade. We moved an awful lot, so I was always at different bases and stuff. So I learned at a very early age how to adjust to my settings, how to adjust to my surroundings. I learned how to read nonverbal communication and basically how to read people, which is either a curse or a blessing, depending on how you look at it. I didn't really experiment with anything until probably, did your typical high school drinking. I never smoked. I didn't do any, it was never any drugs or any inclination to do drugs or anything. Ironically enough, my dad was a drug and alcohol counselor for the Air Force. So I learned at a young age the pitfalls of heroin and PCP and angel dust and cocaine and alcohol especially, and what that can do to people. I remember the old 8mm films and stuff that my dad would bring home and I would see, and just the talks and stuff that he'd had with me and all that other jazz. So it was never really anything that I ever thought that I myself would ever be a part of, or that it would ever take the direction in my life that it took. I was 22 when I first started smoking pot, and I was it took several friends and a lot of coercing, and it took someone showing me how to do it. And you know, then it was just that was that. You know, I mean, once that started, then I was pretty much an active pot smoker. Got into mushrooms for a while, and I got into other things. And this progressed over time. I was 22, 27, you know, I had my first degree in psychology. I went back to school in Seattle for my second degree in industrial design, and then I went back for my third degree in Indianapolis for interior design. I was a professional by trade. I worked as a model making, architectural model making. I started my own business in construction. You know, I was a custom builder, custom fabricator. I was handling a lot of people's money and so on and so forth, people's homes. So my attic life and my professional life were, for the most part, for a long time, were separate. Although one and the same, they still were separate. And there was a secret to most. I didn't really reveal to a lot of people in the professional or what I was doing that, you know, I didn't let that area spill over into my job. I was a very functioning addict. I was a very careful addict. It eventually, that luck does run out. There came times where I was involved with some, certain drug-related industries and stuff like that, where, you know, it was, even though that it was legal, it was still a gray area, got into probably the more designer highs, the designer drugs, I guess, you know, spice, bath salts, stuff like that. Started experimenting with heavier and heavier drugs, not necessarily chasing a dragon, but it was it was more of just how far could I push it, where could I push it, the things that I could do, the places I could go, and the illusion that I had that I was in control of my addiction, when in fact my addiction was in control of me. And I think that's the hardest thing for a lot of people to realize, is that, you know, being an addict, you know, addiction is such a cunning enemy that we never are ever in control in the manner in which we think we are, that we never have the, you know, we always say, oh, I can stop whenever, or I can quit whenever, you know, but that never becomes a reality. We never take the opportunities to really stop and look at what's going on. We always find other ways and means to keep doing more. You know, then you have a life problem, you know, or there's one more birthday, or there's one more party, or there's one more reason to celebrate, or there's one more death in the family, or there's one more death in the group, or, you know, there's, you're having a bad day, and, you know, you compound it, and that interest compounds, and then it continues to compound, and then next thing you know, you're seven layers deep, you know, into a situation that you don't understand where you're at or how you got there, and then you don't care, and then you want to keep doing more. So, you know, I never expected, you know, the things to happen the way they happened. You know, I lost some good friends. I had one of my best friends committed suicide. He was clean for a good long time, 13 years, I believe, and then relapsed. And that was painful to watch. Difficult now, I think, because now I understand where he was at and what he was going through, now that I have my own program, and the struggles that he must have gone through, very personal, very dear. I had another friend who passed away, from medical complications, who after heart surgery continued to live that active lifestyle. And you know, you sit back and you always watch people and you go, why are you doing this? Why do you not care? You need to take care of yourself. You know what I mean? Self-perception or self-preservation is, you know, is a strange thing, I think. You know, you always know what you should be doing. You know what you can be doing, but whether or not you do it, or whether or not you do it to appease other people, that's the difference. You know, it's like the whole saying, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. It's the same with an addict. You can take him to a meeting, or you can do an intervention, but you can never make him quit. Until you're absolutely ready to quit, then you have to be, you know, that has to come from you. You have to want it. And, you know, I didn't want it. I didn't want it. You know, I had gotten to a point in my life where, you know, I had the ways and means to finance, and if I couldn't finance it, I found ways to finance it. You know, I did things that I wouldn't normally have done, you know, sober. I've done things that, you know, I wouldn't have ever imagined myself ever doing. And those things, you know, cost me dearly. They cost me friendships. They cost me jobs. They cost me humility, dignity. And you know, they cost me a future in a lot of ways, because I chose to surround myself by people of like minds. I wasn't giving myself any opportunities to better my situation or to better my livelihood or to better who I was or where I was going. Because I had no idea who I was. I had no idea where I was going. And that is so true in addiction. It's like you get so wrapped up in yourself that you're so self-centered, so closed, so isolated. You know, you're so closed off that it makes it difficult for you to even admit, let alone want to do something about it. You know, it damn near took an act of God, of my understanding, to do anything about it. You know, I mean, it was, I had learned what the definition of insanity was, because I was doing it over and over and over again, expecting a different result, and that result was never anything productive. It was never anything good. It was always one disaster after another. It was always one mishap after another. It was always one prairie fire after another. I was constantly putting out fires of my own doing. I mean, you know, I mean, when you sit back and look at it, it's just like, you know, I'm lucky. I'm just grateful that I'm here. I'm lucky that I'm here, because you just can't, you can't barter time. You know what I mean? You can't bargain with your higher power. It was like, you know, if you just get me through this, or if you just get me through that, or if I can get through this, I'll be okay. Or if I can get through that, I'll be okay. You know, and that's not the answer. You know, that's not the answer. And it was always something in the back of my head. And I can remember I was in my mid-40s, and I was on to cocaine, I was on to meth, I was on to experimenting with heroin, I was in the IV needles and drugs. I had reached this pinnacle where never had I in my wildest dreams ever expected that I would ever be at this point, and yet here I was. You know, I became more isolated, I became more dark, I became more deceptive, I became more deceitful. Selfish, very self-centered. I struggled with a lot of things, and those things were everything that I was unable to handle, everything that I was unable to deal with, everything. I wasn't able to look myself in the mirror. I had no idea who I was. I'd look myself in the mirror, and it was just, I would look into my eyes, and there was just this empty vessel of a shell of a person. And you know, that was hard. That became really hard. That was a hard pill to swallow. And, you know, and I was burning candles at both ends. I mean, it was to a point where, you know, life became unbearable. It became very unmanageable. I was not in control. I never had any control whatsoever. It was an illusion, all of it. You know, the hallucinations were so real that I had no idea the difference between reality and fiction. It was hard. And, you know, I had moved in such a manner that my past was coming back to haunt me, that everything was starting to catch up to me. And I gave in. July 7th of 2019, I threw in the towel. I was like, that's it. I couldn't do it no more. So, I left everything I loved, everyone I knew, my business, my relationships, my friendships, the family that I've made, and I left everything to come home, to the only place that I knew I could go. And I'm grateful for the fact that I even had a place to go. I'm grateful for the fact that I could walk through a door of my mom and dad's house and say, hey, I'm a meth addict, I need help. Not a lot of people have that opportunity. not a lot of people get that opportunity. So I'm grateful for the fact that I actually had that. And you know what? It's a 2-day drive, roughly about 1,000 miles from Indianapolis to Cheyenne, Wyoming, and I had a lot of time to think. Because in my paranoia, I broke my phone and I broke my tablet and I broke my computer. I had no GPS. I had no ways or means of communicating with anybody. I was basically just driving by memory to get home. And so I had a lot of time to think. And everything that I thought of, all the scenarios that I played over my head, none of them could have prepared me for how the actual scenario played out. And that was with my parents making phone calls and getting me into a program and giving me a place to live and food. And it was a humbling moment, because I had to surrender, and really that's what you have to do. Telling someone they need to surrender, telling someone they need to give in, is really hard to actually do. It's a hard thing to explain. But any addict in recovery, any addict who works their own program, understands what surrender means. And surrendering means it's just letting go of what you know, letting go of yourself. And the image that you have of yourself, and turning your life over to a higher power, and your livelihood over to a higher power of your understanding, is how it goes. As long as it's greater and more loving and caring than yourself, then however it works. And getting yourself into a program, it took coming home for me to do that. And I didn't have any expectations. I didn't know what to expect. I was in uncharted territory. I've been in active addiction for 27 years. 27 years. Barely successful at that. I was still able to get through things, and stuff, but very unsuccessful as well. And it was some difficult times. And I struggled with the inpatient program, or the outpatient program, sorry. I was combative, I guess, if you want to say, verbally combative. I was, too smart for my own good. I tried to rationalize my way out of things. I tried to rationalize my ways around things. I was trying to come up with all the reasons why I shouldn't do it, but I couldn't come up with any reasons why I should. And the only reason why I should was I just had to take a stop and look and be like, I couldn't do it. I was powerless. I was absolutely powerless. And coming to that conclusion has really paved the way for just, it's okay to do what you want to do until it's time to do what you have to do, And I've said this a long time. A lot of people know this. I wouldn't be surprised if anyone knows it, though. It's like, it's the little things you do that you have to do that matter the most when it's too late to do anything about them. And, I got back here and I surrendered to a program, and I surrendered to a way of life, and I surrendered to starting over. And greatest thing I could have ever done. It's the best thing I could have ever done. Life on life's terms. My life on life's terms. And, after 10 years, I got my son back. I have an opportunity to be a part of his life. He has an opportunity to be a part of mine. My father passed away last month. For 6 months, I got an opportunity to be a part of his, where I was non-existent for about 20 years. And that's, you would think that would be something difficult to be like, 6 months, 20 years. I was present for the moments that I had with him, and I was grateful for those moments. I'm grateful for the moments that I had with my mom, presently and currently. I'm present, in my groups. I'm present with with my fellowship, with my program, my sponsor. These are all people who are a part of my life now, and and the only way that I could actually achieve what I have today is because of them. Because I can't do it myself. I mean, there's no way you can do it yourself. If you think you can do it yourself, you're crazy. If you can, awesome. I have good friends like Troy. Troy and I, and what we do for Ravers for Recovery is awesome, because we're providing a service. Are we new? Absolutely. Are we learning how to walk? Absolutely. You know what? But we get up and we show up every day with the faith that we want to help and we want to carry a message. And, that's a tremendous and wonderful opportunity to have. For every addict out there who struggles, it is a difficult choice to make. It is one of the hardest things that you'll ever do. But at the same time, and I know this is hard to explain, it's also the easiest thing that you'll ever do. Let it go. Let it go. Give yourself a chance. Give yourself a break. Give yourself the opportunity to be the best version of you that you can possibly be. And I don't know how that is. For everyone, everyone's recovery is different. Everyone's program is different. For every, how you get there is entirely up to you. Whether you roll in, fly in, jump in, crawl in, skip in, however you do it, get there. Reach out. Talk to somebody. And I guarantee you that it's you'll surprise yourself. If it doesn't work the first time, then try again. I was fortunate enough that I was at a point in my life where I just had enough. I was done. I knew that if I continued on the path that I was going on, I was going to be dead. And that's not something, you hear that very often. That's something that's common in the rooms that you hear. It's like, if I would have continued on what I was doing, I'd be dead. So easily has that done a 180. I may not be moving as fast as I used to move. I may not be going in as fast in a direction as I used to go or thought I needed to go. But you know what? I live for today. And that today is one day at a time, just for today. And I'm present for today because I'm not going to use today. I have no desire to use today. And I don't want to use tomorrow either. But you know what? I'm not here tomorrow, so I'll wait till I'm here tomorrow and I'll work on it. But today, I'm okay. My life is richer, fuller. I have more happiness. I'm more successful in terms of my life than success in terms of a social ladder. I have a good job. I have benefits. I have a roof over my head. I have a great relationship with my son. I have a great relationship with my mom. I have a great relationship with myself, my sponsor, my group, my fellowship. I have a great relationship with my higher power. And those are things that 7 months ago, I couldn't even begin to even say any of that. 7 months ago, I had none of that. 7 months ago, I was chasing death. It wasn't that death was waiting for me. It was just I was hot on his coattails. I was on a mission. I had no idea I was even on a mission. I lost some friendships. I damaged some friendships. I damaged some people. I'm working on that. That's all part of the program. Come to terms and make amends and promptly admit when I'm wrong and move forward and do the best that I can. But a good friend of ours, Abhishek, he said that you have to leverage the knowledge, you get to a certain point in recovery where you leverage that knowledge. And that knowledge says is like, I'm an addict. It's a part of who I am. But I had to go through that to understand this. It doesn't make me a bad person. It doesn't make me a horrible person. Yes, I've done wrong things, but you know what? I can correct those and I can move forward from here and I can do good from here. I can continue my service. I can help out because the only way I keep it is by giving it away. And by giving it away is like I go out and I carry that message to the next person to let you know that, hey, even after 27 years of addiction, even if you are successful, even if you have a business, even if you are educated, even if you have money and you pay your bills and so on and so forth, addiction does not care. Doesn't care if you're rich, doesn't care if you're poor, doesn't care if you're smart, doesn't care if you're dumb, doesn't care if you're big, doesn't care if you're short, doesn't care any of that. It doesn't care where you came from, who you are, it will kill you. And given enough time, it will kill you. However, if you reach out, you ask for help, and you do your service, and you run and find a program, and you reach out and talk to someone, and you take the steps necessary, you can recover. You can beat it. And you can have a good life. And you can find fulfillment in that life. So that's my story. I don't know how that went. I appreciate all of you who tuned in. I'm grateful for all of you. Thank you. I just want to say thank you to Troy. I know you're sick at home, buddy, but I appreciate you. And I'm so grateful for you. Thank you for the opportunity and for allowing me to take this venture with you with Ravers for Recovery. I look forward to the things that we do. I thank all of you for taking the time out on a Friday night to sit with me. And I greatly appreciate each and every one of you. And I'm going to wrap off with, I'm Eric Miller, and this is Ravers for Recovery. And I want to say thank you for each and every one of you. And if you are watching and you do need help, find it. Reach out. You can call me, you can text me, you can message me. I'll be more than happy to talk to you. If not, I'll be happy to do anything I can to help you with a program or anything of that nature, or at least get you pointed in the right direction, because you don't have to be alone in this. You don't have to isolate, and you don't have to be afraid. You know, it happens, you know, but you didn't get here in one day. You know, I'm going to get out in one day, but it can change, and you can have a better and happier and fulfilled life. So, anyhow, my name's Eric Miller. I love y'all. Peace.
You have been listening to another episode of the Ravers for Recovery podcast. I am Troy Wagner.
I'm Eric Miller.
And we are Ravers for Recovery. And if you listen to this, you are too. Go ahead and join the Facebook group, which is growing quickly. You'll find that with keyword Ravers for Recovery. Also, make sure to check out the website. A lot of cool info on there. That's at raversforrecovery.org. Until next time, again, we are Ravers for Recovery.